Support comes from USC Online, providing exceptional online graduate programs, certificates, and upskilling for current and aspiring professionals. Explore your graduate options today with the University of Southern California at online.usc.edu.
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
If you listen and learn, then you're going to be able to do anything you want next time.
Everybody thinks show business.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone Hollywood.
This week on The Business, Sean Hayes on the transition from being Jack on Will and Grace to becoming a TV producer. He and business partner Todd Milliner talk about getting their NBC show, Grimm, on the air. But first, it's the Hollywood News Banter. Stick around, it's The Business from KCRW.
You can imagine Hollywood, everything is really driven by
making money.
What's with him?
I am joined by my banter buddy, John Horn, who is calling us from New Orleans. Hello, John.
Hello, Kim.
So I guess we should start with the big news of last week that Disney, having gone through a really failed experiment with Rich Ross from Cable trying to run their film studio, culminating with John Carter in the $200 million write-down, Disney has gone from a pretty striking lack of experience to major experience.
Yeah, I will say it wasn't only big news in Hollywood, it's big news in New Orleans. I was visiting a movie set talking to a couple producers when the news broke, and they were very excited about that decision. I mean, Disney made, I think, what was probably a fatal error in bringing somebody from cable television, Rich Ross, in to run the studio. Alan Horn was the president of Warner Brothers. He oversaw the Harry Potter franchise. He worked with Clint Eastwood. He has deep and numerous talent relationships. I think it's a kind of an inspired hire, and he was pushed out of Warner Brothers probably before he was ready to go, and I think he still has something to prove, and he's going to be very competitive in that job.
Yeah, I mean, the big question, of course, is that Disney has, they have these relationships with DreamWorks, and they own Pixar, and they have Marvel, which is just provided the Avengers, which is a good thing. It's a very self-contained separate unit, though. And, they have Jerry Bruckheimer. They have these suppliers, and they haven't done a lot of making of their own films. They did have John Carter, and they have some other big-ticket items left in the pipeline that are coming up next year, like Lone Ranger with Johnny Depp. But they haven't shown this tremendous interest in making movies, and certainly not making eclectic movies. It's all been about, let's try to make something where we can sell lunchboxes and make a theme park ride. So whether a guy like Alan Horn can be satisfied by doing that kind of thing is sort of a question, I think, on the minds of some.
Yeah, if you look at the Disney slate, they have one Disney-produced movie the rest of the year, The Odd Life of Timothy Green. And Alan Horn is not going to come into the job to make The Odd Life of Timothy Green Part 2. And I think if you look closely at the announcement, it does look as if he's going to have more responsibility than Rich Ross did. But still, as you mentioned, Bob Iger, the chairman of Disney, has not made a huge commitment to Disney movies. And the real question is, will he make that commitment? Will he spend the money it needs to reestablish that studio? And will they make movies that are not Pirates of the Caribbean, that are not Disney-branded films? I would argue that Disney is still a good brand name, but there is a great resource that's untapped within that studio, and I think Alan Horn might be the person to take that to the next level.
Well, we'll see. Maybe they have a deal about what he gets to do. But meanwhile, in terms of what the early stages of summer has wrought in Hollywood, it's just been bombs away. I mean, it's just been one big movie after another. If you're not the Avengers, you're kind of either a major money loser or you'll squeak by. And of course, I'm referring to Battleship from Universal, Dark Shadows from Warner Brothers. I don't even know that Sony is going to be able to really declare victory with Men in Black. So it's been brutal out there. We talked last week about how Paramount moved G.I. Joe out of the summer to get out of the way. It's a scary time in Hollywood.
It's feast and famine. I took a look at the second quarter box office numbers. A year ago, the third Transformers movie accounted for 11% of all the box office grosses in the second quarter. This year, Avengers has made up nearly 40% of all of the grosses in the second quarter. So it is Avengers and nothing else. I mean, the second highest grossing film of the quarter is Think Like a Man with $88 million. And I think the other thing that's been really interesting is that Hollywood has bet so much money and so much time on what it considers brand names. And right now, brand names are a liability. Battleship didn't help that movie. Men in Black didn't help that movie. Three Stooges. What to expect when you're expecting. Huge best-selling book. will probably be outgrossed by Chimpanzee, a Disney documentary. So that says that not only is the business changing, but what used to be a safe or sure bet is no longer that.
And we see with Hunger Games and The Avengers, if you deliver what the audience really wants, they will go to the theater. But if you miss that little bullseye, they think, you know, they'll wait around, they'll watch it on Netflix, they'll get it out of Redbox. They don't really care to just go to the movie and spend the money and have a lackluster experience.
No, and we've talked a lot about how important the international box office is. It's even more so this year. And the real hits, or surprise hits, I would say, of the season so far have been movies that have done incredibly well overseas. I mean, a lot of people wrote off Universal's American Reunion that only grossed $57 million here. It made $160 million overseas. We've talked about Intouchables, the French movie, that's at $350 million worldwide. Even the best exotic Marigold Hotel passed $100 million worldwide. Those are not very expensive movies that have done incredible business overseas. And I think the studios are looking at those numbers and trying to figure out how they can tap into that.
Well, speaking of overseas, the Cannes Film Festival has wrapped up now. And, you know, it does seem that there's some movies coming out that could be Oscar contenders. Certainly, there was a lot of buzz around the film that ultimately won the Palme d'Or, which is a film by Austrian filmmaker Michael Haneke called Amour, Love. Apparently a very wrenching film about senior citizens and their romance is disrupted when one of them becomes very ill. And that was just one of the films that seemed to get a fair bit of buzz coming out of Cannes.
The other movie I would cite is a movie that I'm actually in New Orleans writing about, and that is Beasts of the Southern Wild, which won the Grand Jury Prize at Sundance. It won the Camera d'Or for the best first feature. It's a very innovative, slightly experimental movie set in southeast Louisiana. It's coming out later in June from Fox Searchlight. I think Cannes is very much about launching momentum behind some of these films, and I think both the Haneke movie and Ben Zeitlin, who made Beasts of the Southern Wild, they come out of that festival looking really good.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, Kim.
That's John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. And you can banter about Hollywood news anytime on our Facebook page, KCRW's The Business. Coming up later in the show, Sean Hayes reflects on the early days of Will and Grace. But first, he and Todd Milliner take their NBC show, Grimm, from fantasy to reality. NBC's Grimm, which just wrapped its first season, is a police procedural wrapped in a fairy tale. Set in modern-day Portland, the main character is a homicide detective descended from the Grimm family, which has hunted supernatural creatures for generations.
My ancestors used all of this stuff. You know, I figured it's about time for me to learn it.
Dude, you have a gun.
I can't shoot everybody. Plus, I used pepper spray on this kid the other day. Turns out he was a Scallengeck, had no effect.
Scallengeck, he probably enjoyed it. Yeah, this definitely would have done the trick. But how are you going to explain all this stuff to Hank?
I don't know. Check it out. The first bolt is meant to slow the attacker down. You fill it with hellebore extract. According to the book, that's supposed to act like a tranquilizer gun, and if that doesn't work, you always have the second bolt, filled with hemlock.
NBC has renewed Grimm for a second season, but getting the show on the air in the first place wasn't easy. It came from the team of Sean Hayes and Todd Milliner, who are partners in the production company Hazy Mills. Their first go project was the 2005 reality show Situation Comedy on Bravo. After that, they spun their wheels with pilots that didn't go anywhere until Suzanne Martin, a writer from Frasier, brought them the idea for Hot in Cleveland. That show, with an ensemble that includes Betty White, became a staple on TV land. But you probably know Hayes best as an actor. Most recently, he played Larry in the Farrelly Brothers' Three Stooges movie, but many people will always remember Hayes first and foremost from Will and Grace. So, Sean, obviously, America knows you as Jack.
Yeah.
Largely.
Yeah.
As other things, too. But Jack.
Sure.
I mean, is that defining still? Do people sort of stop you and say Jack?
Yeah. Some people, you know, one of the funniest stories was I just finished the Three Stooges movie with the Farrelly Brothers.
Right.
And I was dressed in full Larry garb with bald head and crazy frizzy hair. And some woman came up to me, oh, my God, it's Jack. I'm not
that
even kidding.
Really happened?
Really happened.
So,
you know, it's the biggest blessing and curse of my life.
Yeah.
More blessing, I believe.
Yes, 100% more blessing.
Do you sort of love-hate Jack?
No, five, 6 years ago, I probably would have said I love-hated Jack, but now I love. You know, I love the opportunity it gave me. I love the experience and the whole ride of starring on a hit show. You know, It was Todd's right. It was a bigger blessing than anything.
So you come out of there and you at some point make a decision that you want to go beyond acting.
Yeah, you know, it was just timing, like as everything in life. Todd kind of reached out to me with a couple great ideas that he wanted to produce. At the same time, I was thinking about what am I going to do after the show ended, after Will and Grace was over. And it just kind of happened that way. And, you know, if you're self-aware, as so many people are not in this business, you have to learn from the obvious and observation of an actor from a hit show. The odds are against you that you will move on to other starring huge roles and other things. Yes, it can be done, but it's not very likely. So, in effect, what are you going to do? What's going to get you out of bed in the morning? So that's when I started thinking of what is my future? And at the same time, Todd came.
Well, Todd, how is it that you came to Sean?
Well, I was
in a car.
Yeah, it was a car. It was a Nissan.
In a car. Okay.
I was out in Los Angeles at the time, and I was working with Second City, and I happened to be in Los Angeles.
You're an improv guy?
Yes. I went up to Chicago and did Second City, and he came to Los Angeles and did more lucrative things.
Yeah, I planned it that way.
Yeah, good planning.
And then when I came out, you know, we were just hanging out, and I thought, you know, wouldn't this be a great idea for a TV show? And
well, wait a minute. What wouldn't this be a great idea?
It was our first Project Greenlight was on the air, and I was a big fan of Project Greenlight, and I thought, why don't we do that for television?
I mean, obviously that was the thing with Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, and they were trying to figure out somebody's going to make a movie.
Yeah.
But all of which turned out to be excellent films.
Right. Well, we may have over-anticipated the ability.
It was good TV.
It is good TV.
I mean, I watched.
Well, it was educational, too. It was interesting. It was educational.
Yeah, I wasn't that easy of a tumble, and I watched.
Yeah, I mean, even if the movies weren't, you know, hugely successful, at least it gave people a new perspective of the business.
Yeah, it was cool.
Of the business.
Yeah.
Can I get the name of the show, anybody?
So that the show you came up with was?
It was called Situation Comedy, and it was on Bravo. And we made two sitcoms at the same time, and then America was supposed to pick which one would win and then be on NBC. Well, they picked which one would win, but it didn't make it on NBC.
Something went south on the getting it on NBC part.
But it was great.
Did NBC say we'll put it on and then fink out on you?
No, they didn't. They didn't promise that. There was a lot of, you know, their hope was that they would find a hit sitcom,
and
they didn't. I think that it was a great show. I think it had a place, but at the time NBC wasn't looking for that type of show, and it went off into the moonlight.
It happens to so much stuff, you know. I always think about Fox has only so much space for a comedy, so what if there are these awesome comedies and they never get to live somewhere else? Right. It seems completely wrong.
I just said that in the meeting at NBC. I said, what takes a great idea 1 year and turns it into a bad idea the next year? You know, why don't you just dust it off and try it again?
Right.
Well, I think it's just, don't you think it's just ADD of this community?
Probably.
And like the excitement factor, just if they're not excited about it one day, it's dead.
You know, we're probably going to talk about Grimm at some point, but Grimm went through one of those roller coaster rides. It was sold many times before it made it on the air.
That's a good segue.
It could be a good segue.
If she wanted to go there, but she doesn't.
Do I want to go with that? I'm trying to improvise.
Yes.
Do I want to go with that segue? I actually want to just, before I get to that segue, I want to be boring and chronological a little more. So you do the sitcom show, and do you then say, well, let's make a company and do, I'm trying to just get the sequence of events.
Yeah, we actually did two shows. We did another show called Underexposed, which was actually closer to Project Greenlight in that we took very vague, nondescript scripts and gave them the exact same script to three different filmmakers and had them go off and in 1 week shoot a short film based on this script. And then we've had a panel of judges and we voted on which one was the best. And the judges were Craig Zaden, Jon Favreau, and Trudy Styler. But that didn't make it.
No, it was a very similar show by Mark Burnett, made it a little later, called The Lot. But it was very similar. You know, it was taking young directors and seeing how they would interpret a very basic script. And, you know, we started with two reality shows that were all about making television and films. And that's kind of how we learned that we wanted to make television and film.
Right. But then you circle back and I don't know how many scripted shows you tried before you got to Hot in Cleveland.
Quite a few.
Yeah.
Yeah. Years. Like maybe 4 or 5 years.
Yeah. And we were very close and it was very humbling.
Did you think about being in any of these, Sean?
I don't think I would have fit as a woman in Hot in Cleveland.
I wasn't thinking of that. I was thinking of the unknown other ones that fell by the way.
I know, I'm just kidding. Always in the back of our minds. And, you know, we're always thinking about what is that right thing for me to be in again if we ever do that.
We are always looking for something for Sean. The right thing.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with producing partners Sean Hayes and Todd Milliner. They have two shows on the air, Hot in Cleveland on TV Land and Grimm on NBC. Grimm premiered last year, but Milliner says the idea came to him back in 2004.
I was taking a shower, honestly, and I was trying to think of how would I find a procedural that I would want to watch, a cop show, because they seemed like there were thousands of them. And I called Sean and I said, what if the Grimm fairy tales were real and they were happening right now and our lead was the only one that could see them? Sean's like, that's a great idea. Let's, you know, it's also in the public domain.
Right.
And we took it to CBS where we had our deal. They loved it.
They actually said, quote, it was the best pitch they've ever seen.
Yes, the best pitch.
Wow. Really, how did you pitch it to be the best pitch ever?
Well, we had a writer named Steve Carpenter who was a feature writer, still is a feature writer. And we took in a bigger fairy tale show than it is now. It was more mystical. And that version sold to CBS. I think it was new and different for them.
Did it just sit in the room and spin a yarn, basically?
Yeah. We actually did a trailer. We cut together images and music and did a voiceover of exactly what we wanted the show to look like. Mm-hmm. And at the end of that, they said, let's do it.
And then
the writer's strike.
Yeah.
It was the worst call because I thought this was our best idea.
Right.
You know, and I thought we had finally, you know, made it into scripted television. And they called and they said, we're cutting the show and got to be with you or something.
And they're very religious.
I said the same thing back to them. And we took the show to NBC and Terry Weinberg and Ben Silverman and loved it.
You see,
so
that was the one they bought and then they were gone.
And then they were gone. So NBC cut it.
They cut it.
And then Jeff Gaspin got there. So then when he was running the network, he brought the idea back to us. And by then, Steve Carpenter was off to other projects. And we went to David Greenwalt, who I don't know if you know David Greenwalt, created a show called Prophet, but is from Buffy and Angel and created Angel.
Good track record.
X-Files.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
And then he wrote, along with Jim Kalf, who wrote National Treasure, wrote this version of it.
Also fantastic.
And then Jeff Gaspin left.
He was,
and then Bob Greenblatt,
who
was
in the Comcast era,
yes, and Bob Greenblatt came in and pulled it back.
The current head of NBC,
again.
Yeah. So what is that? Four times,
yes,
or something?
Four times.
You were bounced around. Yeah.
We were bounced around, and there was a moment that we thought it might go to sci-fi, but finally, the right combination of people and Bob Greenblatt gave us a little bit of money and sent us up to Portland, and we made Grimm.
Yeah, it's kind of like our Mark Burnett Survivor. You know, you've heard that story about he pitched that show
all over,
year after year after year.
Yeah, we kept going and people kept believing in it. NBC, everybody believed in it.
And then you get to the upfronts, or maybe before last year.
Yeah.
And you find out that there's another fairy tale show.
Well, yeah. I mean, seriously, we had the idea in 2004.
Yeah.
They had
the
idea also for years.
Yeah. And really the year that we finally get it made, there's another one.
Were you like,
Yeah, a little bit. But then we were like, you know what? First of all, our show is completely different.
Very different.
And we started with wanting to do something in one world. And we wanted to have a real explanation for what the Grimm fairy tales were, what fairy tales were. And, you know, just a different way historically to explain why these things happen in the world. And
both shows are good. Yeah, both shows are great.
Ours, awesome.
I always say, ours awesome. Is a little more adult.
Right.
And the other one is a little more younger feeling.
I mean, who do you think is the profile? Are you looking at a specific demographic?
We were always looking to not just attract the fans of genre that go to Comic-Con. We think those folks are already welcoming to us.
Right.
But also the people that love police procedurals and dramas and scares.
Right.
So
we stacked the deck a little bit.
Coming up after a short break, Sean Hayes on the early days of Will and Grace. To make a comment about today's program, go to kcrw.com/thebusiness. You're listening to The Business from KCRW.
Take KCRW with you on one of our smartphone apps. Available for the iPhone, Android, and BlackBerry. You can stream KCRW live, listen to podcasts, and all our news and music streams. Learn more and download at kcrw.com/apps.
You're listening to The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. We're talking with Sean Hayes and Todd Milliner, two college friends turned producing partners. They have a couple of shows on TV now, Hot in Cleveland with Betty White on TV Land, and Grimm, the supernatural police procedural on NBC. Hayes, of course, is an actor, and his defining role was Jack on Will and Grace. In recent weeks, Vice President Joe Biden famously credited that sitcom with helping to advance the issue of gay rights. But when the show was still an idea, some at NBC thought America wasn't ready for it, something that former NBC chief Warren Littlefield discusses in his book Top of the Rock. I asked Hayes if he had been worried about taking the job.
No, no, no. I was so young. I was completely naive, and I was an idiot. You know, I didn't know anything. All I knew was how to act, you know. I didn't know anything about the business. I thought everybody was really nice and treated you really kind, which a lot of people still do.
But, you weren't even living here.
No, I lived here. I lived here. I'd done many, many commercials before I got Will and Grace. And then I did an independent film called Billy's Hollywood Screen Kiss, which actually propelled me into getting the job for Will and Grace.
And then the character of Jack. I mean, Will is sort of like the more subdued, you know, he was like they were trying to sell it, not even as they didn't tell people he was going to be a gay character.
Yeah.
But your character was like gay.
Yeah.
And that didn't, you didn't say, yeah, but what if?
I didn't have any kind of, I was just happy to get a pilot. You know, it was, nobody can guess what's going to be a hit. So I just was happy to be working. But I wasn't worried about the gay part at all because maybe I was naive. I just didn't think anybody else would care. You know, if you're okay with the job you have and you're good at it, then why consider anybody else's feelings if they're negative?
Did it turn out, was there a surprise involved for you that it was more defining than you thought and wanted it to be? Or
yeah, I had no idea that it would have such an impact and sociologically and, you know, in the business as well. I mean, but you know, everybody paves the way, whether it's a gay character or an African-American character or anything kind of outside of the box. You can't do it without the help of a previous owner of that. And so we had, I'd like to believe, I don't know if this is true, I'd like to believe Ellen paved the way for Will and Grace, and Will and Grace paved the way for Modern Family. Now, I know that's a very big statement to make, but and I may be wrong.
Right.
But it seems, I'd like to believe that.
And maybe Billy Crystal paved the way for the whole
match on. And thank you for mentioning that. Yeah, exactly. And it all helps each other, you know. And so much so that I don't know that nobody even bats an eye at casting a gay character now or writing a gay character.
You kind of have to have one almost.
Almost, yeah. But it's almost like there's nothing new or surprising about that now. So now,
been a little pushback on Glee because they've really hit it. You know, for a long time, you know, there was so much talk about was the gay character allowed to play a sexual.
Right.
Was that a constraint for the Jack character that he couldn't? Was there ever talk about what kind of a romance?
No, he wasn't. You didn't see any sexual activity, but
yeah.
He was definitely dated on the show.
He dated,
and
but
so
yeah.
did the character of Will.
Yeah,
so there's
wasn't shown
just
so
no
much.
Making out, and you know,
yeah,
and but that will come. I mean, people just fear what they don't know or fear what they haven't seen. So
it's. I mean, television does play a big role socially. Now, I'm trying to find an anecdote that is from this book about NBC. It's an anecdote in which I guess Will and Grace is getting to the end of its life, and you call Jeff Zucker.
Do you remember that?
And you say, I think you say, what can we do to help market the show, right?
Yeah, it was sort of, and what was his response?
And he says, it's over, Sean.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nobody cares.
Yeah, he was really kind that way. I don't know that Jeff Zucker's strong point was talent relations. There's some good in Jeff as a human being somewhere.
Katie Couric likes him.
Yeah, he was always pleasant to me.
In this anecdote, you say you hung up on him.
Yeah, I mean, Jeff and I, you know, we had a relationship over the years it was a friendship that we could be honest and open with each other. And he would call me and ask for favors to go on TV or shows and do this. And I would ask him for things and wouldn't get them. But anyway.
That is not easy to hear that your show's done, no matter who's saying that to you.
You know, I've always wondered about that because sometimes you see a show and it's clearly gotten to this point where it starts to clank, you know. And I always wondered when you're on one of those shows, do you start feeling like the lines you're saying just suck?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the last two, I'm very public about the last two seasons of Will and Grace were just in outer space. And it's all of our faults. It's the writers, it's the actors, it's the producers, it's everybody's fault. We just couldn't tame it. But back to the Jeff Zucker thing, just to close that. I think what I was upset about at the end of Will and Grace, and I learned this from Todd, is it's not what you say, it's how you say it. So I think I was responding to just the way he was saying it.
Well, it sounded very brusque.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't very tempered.
So grim. I mean, NBC has been through a terrible ordeal. Mm-hmm. And at this point, I was wondering when we were talking about NBC before, is it, you know, obviously when it was must-see TV, everybody wanted to come to NBC.
Sure.
It was hot. And now I think, is that your last stop? Or do you think, well, this is a land of opportunity because they need us?
Well, I always consider it a land of opportunity. I mean, I understand what you're saying, but I think it offers you to take so many more risks, which ultimately will build the number one network again. I think it's just as exciting to kind of redefine who you are under new leadership like Comcast, who's willing to take the time with somebody as great as Bob Greenblatt and nurture that rather than go through what I've gone through, which is something like 5 or 6 different presidents over 8 years. It was absolutely insane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been pretty crazy.
Yeah. Poorly run.
I think we can all remember a time growing up. I can remember a time when every network was in last place. There was a time when every network has been in last place.
At a certain point.
You know, CBS wasn't always number one.
Right.
No, when Les got there, they were hardly at number one.
Exactly. We always look at it like opportunity. Mm-hmm. I mean, we want to take every one of our ideas to NBC.
Yeah.
It's maybe a more forgiving environment. They give you more time to build your audience.
Sure,
they,
sure, which is,
you
know.
I have to.
How do you guys split up the chores?
Todd runs the company up and down. And
you just swan in every once in a while and say, I don't like it.
Yeah, exactly. Because everybody likes that guy.
That's not quite true. It's with all the creative stuff is shared right down the middle. I might run the company, but creatively, we sit in a room and we throw stuff against the wall and we generally, I mean.
We develop together and Todd does the day-to-day.
Yeah, when he was on Broadway, it was so funny. You know, it's get in between a matinee and an evening performance and sit down in his dressing room and go, okay, here's what we're working on.
Right.
You know,
right.
I need your opinion on these things. And it's kind of fun.
And video chat stuff like that.
So what's what you do now? You're developing more stuff and looking to the next thing? Or you let Grimm run on its own and
well, it's funny. We,
fuss over it anymore?
Grimm's a full-time job. We've got some great, I mean, Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio was just added for multiple episodes and we're getting her up and running and making sure that we're doing all the right stuff going into Comic-Con. So it's really kind of a full-time job. Hot in Cleveland just ended for the season, and that comes back in August. And we're just launching a show with Cedric the Entertainer called The Soul Man, which is going to start in June on TV Land. And then we are developing. We just signed a new deal with NBC. And we are going to figure out something for Sean this year.
Mm-hmm. A show to be on?
Yes, details to follow.
Are we talking sitcom?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if you ever think of yourself as a dramatic.
No, only in his personal life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're always developing because I think Sean and I have lived our lives at Hazy Mills thinking that we're one step away from selling auto insurance in Schaumburg, Illinois.
Right.
And I think that's
Hot in Cleveland alone would probably get you out of that.
Well, you know, you don't know how well we sell insurance.
that's true. You may be brilliant at that.
But we always think that this business is taught us a lot, and I think for sure him about acting, being a successful actor, me having zero success in acting and much else in my life, realizing that we can always go back. So we're always clawing at the next thing.
Todd Milliner and Sean Hayes are producing partners in their company, Hazy Mills. They currently have 2 shows on the air, Grimm on NBC and Hot in Cleveland on TV Land. Thank you, guys.
Thank you for having
us.
And that's The Business. Darby Maloney produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. You can listen to us anytime on demand with the KCRW smartphone apps. And you can always subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. The show is produced and distributed by KCRW. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.